Welcome back, everybody, to the Religious Studies Project. How are you today, Chris?
I'm pretty good, thanks, David. Yes,
my name is Christopher Carter, and this is David Robertson.
Yes, everybody knows that for now, I'm sure.
Yeah, but we want to, you know, this is our marketing ploy for future employment and everything, is, you know, mentioning our names every moment that we go.
Indeed. We are this week in the Hanging Bat, which is a beer cafe, not a pub.
Yeah, it's on Lothian Road in Edinburgh. We're drinking pints of the Wild Beer Company's Redwood.
I believe so, yes. It's their amber beer. They have a stronger porter style and a light ale as well.
Yeah, I have been having the Hanging Bat recommended to me quite a bit recently by colleagues in the Edinburgh Gilbert and Sullivan Society. But before I was... The last time I was here was called Mr. Modo's, I believe, and it was a... Not quite as classy as it is right now.
Well, you know what I always say, Chris. If opera people and religious studies people recommend somewhere, then there's got to be something to that.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who know what they're talking about.
These are
facts.
So, to get to the sort of topic of the week, this is the start of our exciting Psychology of Religion series. We've got three podcasts coming up in this series for you. Today is the first interview from our pal Chris Silver, who you were introduced to last week.
Absolutely, yeah. This first interview with Heinz Strybe on faith development theory, I admit I do not know what this is going to entail. I have to also tell the listeners that when we first heard the title of this, we were slightly discombobulated, shall we say.
It had the word faith.
It had the word faith in it. That's our main issue. But
yes.
But
turns out, you know.
Yes. Let's put it this way. In the psychology of religion, they maybe use terminology in a different way that we do in RS.
Yeah.
Strict. Sense of strict.
Sense of strict.
They maybe don't draw the same strict distinctions and make the same categorical... they don't problematize the categories in quite the same way that we do.
I don't know how you've edited this episode, David, but when I listened to the recording initially, there were certainly some delightful interactions. I believe Professor Strybe was out smoking a pipe at
yes,
the time.
Yes, I have kept all of those digressions. They're not in what you'll hear today, but they're going into a special outtakes episode that we make.
And I immediately warmed to it the moment I realised, you know, the gentleman smoking a pipe in Phoenix, I believe. The interview was recorded at the SSSR conference.
Yeah. So we're talking about two southern gentlemen here putting out their pipes in order to have a good confab.
Yeah,
faith development.
Well,
theory.
Not that Heinz Strybe is a southern gentleman.
Is he not?
I believe he's German, from the University of Bielefeld, or however, Bielefeld, or however.
Oh, I think he's an honorary southern gentleman guy with this pipe.
Yes. Anyways, before we talk ourselves into a hole any further, Heinz Strybe.
Hello and welcome to the Religious Studies Project series. We today are going to be discussing about the variety of paradigms that exist within psychology of religion. Of course, the psychology of religion has been around since the early days of William James and has now got a variety of different subfields within the field of psychology of religion. I'm joined with Heinz Strybe, professor at the University of Bielefeld in Germany. Who will be discussing faith development theory and its evolution into the mainstream. So welcome, Dr. Strybe.
Thank you for inviting me to having this interview. And if you start with faith development theory, I had the privilege to do my doctoral thesis and my dissertation project under the advisorship of James Fowler, and it is a critical approach to his model of faith development. And this model now, it's 30 or a bit more than 30 years old. What is the value for us today in the psychology of religion? This is my basic question, and I return to my early days in my dissertation study, but I expand and I want to move this kind of perspective, to see a variety of styles or types of religion more to the middle mainstream psychology. That's, I think, one of the most important things which I would like to see done with this theory, with this model.
Could you, for those people who are not familiar with what faith development is, could you briefly kind of take us through what is faith development as proposed by Fowler?
Okay. The models coming out of the Piagetian, Kohlbergian tradition work with different niveaus or stages. And so faith development theory has six styles or six stages, and they differ in terms of how complex a person thinks about truth, of religious truth, the interpretation of text to relation to other people. So starting with a intuitive style, we move towards a more literal, mythic literal style to a conventional, to go on and be more reflective and individualistic, mm-hmm. and further on to appreciate the other, going to dialogue and be open to the wider truth or the universal perspective. So this kind of variety of styles of religious cognition, I think this was possible only on the basis of the Piagetian framework of development, of cognitive development, or it was heavily inspired in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And the center of gravity was Harvard and Lawrence Kohlberg. Mm. And so he inspired a man coming from Switzerland named Fritz Oser, and the Methodist religious educator minister James Fowler, and they thought perhaps religion functions in a Negro manner, and we can use this model of stages and development.
Now, what's interesting about Kohlberg is that he was sort of an ethical theorist, correct?
Right.
So, I mean, you look at Piaget and Erickson, it's really more the cognitive development and sort of the human development. But we're talking about, I mean, can you tell us a little bit more about sort of the connection of how the stages relate from moving from that Piagetian Erickson to the Kohlberg, the higher stages of Fowler's theory? Are there particular aspects that are more interesting about the upper stages versus the lower?
Okay, so already Kohlberg moved in terms of moral judgment beyond Piaget to include stages or styles of post-conventionalism. Mm-hmm. And he even thought about a seventh stage of universal ethics, which has a strong connection to religion. So religious experience plays a role there. This is not recognized widely, and Kohlberg himself did not make so much out of it. But there was a discussion between Fowler and Kohlberg about this. Fowler was inspired by this expansion into adult development, into stages beyond the conventional faith or morality. And I think this made a difference, not to focus only on children and adolescents, but to move into later age groups, and to expand at the same time into higher stages, as they were called. And Fowler again and again emphasized that individuative reflectiveness, that could not be or should not be the end of the story, which already indicates that there is a prescriptive tone to it. He was, I think, completely aware that he has moved from a descriptive model of stage development into a visionary, prescriptive, and could not hold back his theological background to interpret his final stage with theological metaphors, which is very interesting. And it has parallel to Kohlberg's moral development theory, which needs as the end point a vision of universal communication and solidarity. Otherwise you do not see the heaven open at the end of the ladder of the stages. This is in the 80s, and it happened around Harvard, and I think it was inspiring and a creative...
Sorry.
Okay.
Couldn't figure out what the
hell. Just cut and repeat.
Yeah.
This was in the 80s and happened around Harvard, and they had a very strong developmental logic that moves almost automatically through a mechanism from one stage to the other. And I think there is so much skepticism that the stages and the stage transitions, the mechanisms and the causes for it, are not plausible anymore. It may be true for some stages in cognitive development, but at least I doubt very strongly that it's true for religion, that we have a clear developmental logic or causality causing people to move from one stage to the other. Mm-hmm. But what I still find very helpful, and I would not agree to throw out the baby with the bathwater, that we lose this kind of differentiation of religious styles, which I find very helpful in for doing research. And so we do the faith development interview with 25 questions asking for relationships, for life review, for values, and for religion, again in and again, and identify different styles or types or whatever you may call it. I call them styles. Religious styles. To see these in the interviews, and I think Fowler's evaluation method was still is still valid and helpful for identifying these different styles.
So tell me a little bit more about
sort of how you evolved this into styles is when we think of styles, obviously in developmental theory, it's a linear progression with no means of sort of regressing back down the scale. So tell me a little bit more about the styles. I mean, is it possible for someone who would be considered, say, a stage four to regress back to a stage two in your styles theory? And how would that happen? I mean, what's an example of where that would happen?
This was my early criticism that stage theory cannot explain a return or conversion to a fundamentalist type of religion, which would be staged regarded to be stage two or stage one even. But cognitive development is already at stage three or four or five, or moral development is more advanced. So how could this model explain the revival of early styles? Mm-hmm. And I think this is possible, that people just return to or allow a revival or need a revival of earlier stages to deal with current challenges in their life or deal with crises or something like this. This made me challenge the model of a linear progressive development, and I think we still can differentiate different styles, but not putting them on one line developmental sequence. There could be regression, you may call it, or I would rather call it revival.
Revival, interesting.
Of earlier styles.
Okay, so you have this evolution in theory. So now let's talk about application for a second. So obviously, applying the styles theory, what research opportunities have you had to use this, or other scholars had to use this, where the faith styles, you know, theory has been applied methodologically, maybe in qualitative or quantitative.
So we find like in the deconversion study considerable correlation between style differentiation, the individuative reflective style, with openness to experience. And this is the characteristic of people leaving a community more than people who stay. Keep their membership in religious communities. These are results from the deconversion research, that openness to experience is a very strong correlate to looking for a quote higher style of faith.
Hmm. And when you mean deconversion, you're talking about the project that you did, but Dr. Strive and colleagues.
We did it together.
Yes, actually. Yes. I was about to say, very shameless promotion, I guess, we'll make on the podcast, is that Bielefeld and the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, which is who I'm affiliated with, have been in a 10-year relationship conducting research, and we did a study on deconversion and looking at faith styles, and using the faith development interview was one of the methodologies that we use. So that's the, of course, a book has resulted through the publisher's name, it escapes me, through
Fundingen and Ruprecht.
Yeah.
Is the publisher.
Publisher, yes. So the book is available for anyone who'd like to purchase it. It makes a great stocking stuffer. So what about the quantitative? I know you sort of briefly touched on openness to experience, but what about additional quantitative opportunities that have been, where the faith development interview has been used, or faith styles has been applied?
We can look for the different religious styles in interviews, in faith development interviews, as in any text, and interpret and to have use qualitative approaches, interpretive approaches to identify different religious styles. But there could be other approaches, like having a measure, quantitative measure, for identifying religious styles.
I think this guy wants to be on our interview, evidently. Sorry,
David. I know you're editing this. We're at the hotel, so all right. Anyway.
But there could be other approaches, like quantitative use of a scale to identify religious styles. And this is what we have developed and published 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It is called the Religious Schema Scale. Mm. And we move from styles to schemata in order to be more precise and to have a more precise construct to measure. And schemata are thought to be ways of interpreting, making sense of challenging experiences. So they have an interpretative side. They also have an action side. They call for a certain kind of action, like keeping the other away from me, or going and meet the other. And this is especially important in terms of inter-religious relations. So one schema in reaction to meeting something strange, meeting a strange religion, so the encounter with the alien could lead to a reaction of holding on to one's own truth and keeping the other away. I could react in a different way and say, okay, the other has the right to be that way, and I have my own way of being religious, my own worldview. A third way could be, let's sit together and talk, and it's interesting what you, what kind of faith or what kind of religion or what kind of worldview you present to me. So these three schemata, how to react to the other and to the other religion, schemata are included in the religious schema scale. So it's basically in the domain of interreligious relation, of reaction to the other religion. And so the first construct or subscale is truth of text and teachings. The second I called fairness, tolerance, and rational choice. And the third I called xenosophia, interreligious dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like xenosophia, it need to be explained, and I like this philosophical concept. It's the wisdom which emerges from the encounter with the other. So curiosity, what the other can tell me, is a creative process inspiring new ideas and a new way of thinking about myself and the other.
Interesting. So out of the sort of faith development theory and out of faith development research, you've sort of gone down an alternative psychometric path to create a new scale. So it's like it's kind of like a progression of the field that's created even new areas of potential research. So
that's completely true. And I, on the one hand, I was not developing a faith development scale measuring faith development one to one, but I limited and focused it on certain schemata in a certain domain, and there could be other scales. If we want to measure development anyway, we need to have longitudinal data and use and reuse this scale or the faith development interview with the same person after a certain time distance, and then we can say, okay, there is change, there is development, they move from style 2 to style 4 or something like that, or there was a change from style 3 to style 2. This could happen also. So I think what happens in terms of change or in terms of development is open to empirical research, and all models of development have to be put on hold, at least, and put to the test against the empirical data.
Interesting. I know there's been quite a bit of research on faith development in the United States, but let's talk about Germany for a second. We always focus on the United States, but let's talk about Germany, because I think that's important as well, especially in light of East German, West German differences and those kinds of things. What is some of, with your research team, what are some interesting findings that you all have found conducting research using faith development in Germany? And how does that differ compared to the United States?
I'm not so sure if there is so much of a difference in terms of religious schemata and religious religious styles in the United States and in Germany. I think the differences in our deconversion study did not regard the religious schemata, religious scales, but rather the question of how people cope with the process of leaving a community. And this makes people change their style to a certain degree, and we find many people moving to a different style. And using different schemata after or upon deconversion. But in Germany, this is the major difference we found. Some people have lower scores on positive relations with others and environmental mastery, which we have interpreted as indicating perhaps a mild crisis deconverts experience and a challenge greater than in the U.S. to cope with leaving a religious community. And the conclusion was that we don't have such a variety of faith communities, of churches in Germany, but state, originally state churches, and there's Catholic and Protestant church, and only some marginal groups, if you want. And so you may have greater difficulties finding a new home if you look at all for a new community of worldviews or of a new way of being religious in Germany. So this was a major greater difference than in terms of religious styles.
Interesting. So to focus now on your own research beyond just the faith development, where is your research moving now, Dr. Schreib? What are you currently engaged in as a researcher?
We do, on the one hand, a kind of follow-up to the deconversion research, because surprisingly we found so many people who I self-identified as being spiritual or more spiritual than religious, and we want to know what they mean, because it is in the United States, but perhaps more so in Europe, that people use spirituality as a self-identification and do not think too much about what that means. Mm-hmm. So the semantics and the psychological correlates are important to investigate. But let me say where my research will move at new horizons will be to investigate inter-religious prejudice between the Abrahamic religions. We will use, of course, a model of religious schemata also here, because I think this is a strong application and very close to the domain the religious schema scale speaks to, which means how do I relate to a different religion, in this case Christianity and Judaism and Islam.
Okay, Abrahamic. Okay. I didn't catch the type of religions. Okay, okay. So that's the future of where you're going to take your research.
We have a current project going on in Germany, focusing on the Xenosophia, and want to have a sample across the age ranges and have a broad variety of respondents in Germany. But it would be at least of equal importance or even more importance in terms of comparing cultures to have majority Islamic cultures and the one majority Jewish culture included in this type of research. But this is a future perspective, but I think this could help to get a solution or get some some information, basic information on how cultures and religions can live together and how to deal with prejudice. Because as Hans Küng said, there is no peace on earth without peace between religions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is a thing perhaps we need to do kind of basic research to get at least one perspective on this.
Okay. So it sounds interesting.
Pricing issue.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the times we live in today. So say someone listening to this podcast was interested in learning more about Hein Strive, what's a good resource online that they could go to follow your work and track your progress? Do you have a website?
Sure, we have a website at Bielefeld University, and we I think publish anything we can, which is publishable. Okay. From our research
okay.
on this website, and I think you find it very easily on university and look for theology of our religion. So the current project on Xenosophia, on spirituality, the past research on deconversion, and also the instruments, the religious schema scale and so on, are available there.
Oh, okay. So they're available free for download. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for inviting
me. No, I enjoyed this very much, and I would definitely appreciate your time, Dr. Strive. So thank you.
Thank you.
So you've just been listening to Chris Silver talking with Heinz Strive about faith development theory. So thanks very much for recording that for us, Chris, and thanks to Professor Strive for giving us the interview. So this is our usual outro session. We're still here in the Hanging Bat, and next week is going to be a lecture that we're not a lecture, a podcast that we're very pleased to bring you. It is Anne Taves talking about religious experience. So Anne Taves is at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And is very well known for this book, Religious Experience Reconsidered, which was actually the journal Religion, which is one of, if not the prime journal in religious studies, ran an entire feature of numerous responses on Anne Taves' book. So, you know, it's very well known, and we're delighted to have her speaking with us. Also, doing the interview, a sort of temporary interviewer, maybe he might do a few more for us, you never know. Dr. David Wilson was interviewing Anne Taves, and David, you might remember him from our book reviews podcast, and I believe he won our fantastic Christmas game show, Exactly 60 Seconds.
Yes, I think if you've heard it, you'll recognise him as the guy who handed everyone else's behind to them on a plate,
yeah.
And rather walked home with that one, much to Jonathan's chagrin.
Yeah, so we're absolutely delighted. That was recorded in Chicago when David was over for that. The other David, David Robertson, RSP regular, has been speaking to someone quite important in terms of social theory this week. Would you like to tell us about that, David?
I'll mention it briefly. I don't want to give too much away. Yeah, I was speaking to Bruno Latour this week, who was in Edinburgh to give the prestigious Gifford lectures.
William James gave Gifford lectures.
Indeed, and also
F. Max Muller.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name of the book. But yeah, some of the most important books in religious studies have come from the Gifford lectures, and Bruno Latour was in Edinburgh. He's from the Sciences Po University in Paris. And I was a bit out of my comfort zone, I don't mind admitting that. He's a kind of best known as an anthropologist of science. But I wanted to speak to him, A, because, you know, he's doing the Gifford Lecture, so he's talking about, actually, even something more theological than we normally do. But I just wondered what somebody who studies the way that we gain knowledge would approach this. But I think there's a lot of interesting things about his work, his collapsing of the subject-object distinction, his particular definition of belief, his controversial statement that we've never been modern. And I thought there's a lot of his work that could potentially bear fruit for further exploration in religious studies. So I was pleased to speak to him. I got about an hour, and I think we're going to put it out as two half-hour episodes.
Wonderful. And thank you, David, for doing that interview. I mean, I think probably anyone would have given their back teeth to do that interview, but also it's incredibly intimidating to interview someone so well-known
in that sense.
Yeah, especially when you don't really know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, so thanks so much for doing that, and we'll bring you that in a few weeks. We're still ironing out what's going to happen after the Psychology of Religion series. We think we're pretty settled on it now, but we'll tell you about that later. So, as per usual, if you listen to us through iTunes, or even if you don't, please leave us a rating. We've still only got 11 ratings on iTunes. I know we get at least about 200 downloads a week from iTunes.
11 ratings, Chris. I find that hard to believe. We have over 875 likes on Facebook. Why aren't these people liking us on iTunes?
I don't know. Maybe it must be something to do with Apple.
I think so.
And
maybe
I could understand the hatred of Apple.
Maybe they're making a mistake.
Yeah, which is fair enough. But you can still go on and just hit like, you know, if you want to give some money to charity or something to make up for having visited an Apple website, we'll understand. But also, as David alluded to, we've got our Facebook page, we also have our Twitter account, and as per usual, I'll emphasize our Amazon.co.uk link. If you're in the UK, you can buy stuff through our link on the website. Won't cost you anything, but we will get some money. We've got some coming through now, but I think it's from about 3 people, so again, you know, it'd be really helpful. And apart from that, that's our usual outro from the Hanging Bat in Edinburgh.
Thanks for listening.